Hi, my name is Hans Peter Meyer, and you're listening to the Lift Startups podcast series, all about the entrepreneurs, creatives, and small businesses who are growing the next economy on Vancouver Island.
Hey, Sandra.
Good morning, Hans.
And hi, everybody who's listening. Today, I'm talking to Sandra Viney. 20-plus years ago, Sandra and her partner, Trent McIntyre, opened Atlas Cafe in downtown Courtney. And from my point of view, they changed the way we enjoy food in the Comox Valley. Sandra's also been a huge supporter of the work that we're doing with Lyft. And thanks a lot for that, Sandra. But let's talk about your business. So tell me about Atlas. For the people who don't know about Atlas Cafe, what is Atlas Cafe?
Atlas is a meeting place for the community. I think our original vision really was about being internationally inspired cuisine, but sourcing locally with that Pacific West Coast edge twist. And I think with this global approach, we find that we can offer a little something for everybody. We serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If we go back to 1995, in fact, next week is our 23rd birthday.
Cool. Happy birthday.
Thank you. You know, Trent and I were avid snowboarders and would come up to Mount Washington. And I was quite a strict vegetarian back then. And I really did see a need for really fresh cuisine, both breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So it was an easy transition to see that Courtney was going to be the home of our beloved Atlas.
So, but you guys didn't like, so where did you come from? And
sure,
I know you spent time, you're from Australia, Trent. I mean, I don't know much about Australia's food scene, but everything I hear about it is that it's a really interesting place that way.
Yeah. So I guess in our early 20s, Trent and I were both globetrotters. I had gone around the world, and Trent actually is originally from Saskatchewan, and he did hotel management after finishing his school. And he has always been that entrepreneur, always knew that he was going to own his own restaurant. He made his way over for Expo 88, I believe it was, in Brisbane. And so he's lived and breathed all things food and beverage. I think his first job was at a Smitty's at 14 years of age. So he started literally from the ground zero and has worked himself within our industry to establishing something that is definitely a pride and place for us.
Would visitors from Australia recognize things in your menu? Like, would they see a particular Australian angle?
Yeah, you do. When I grew up, cafes were very fresh. You always had a lot of alive food, always regionally sourced, a lot of fresh squeezed juices, and the coffee culture is outstanding. And so for me, when I came to Canada, we didn't and don't have, it's changed today, of course, but, you know, the outlets that are more corporate, most of the food outlets in Australia are ma and pa operated. So there's not many franchisees
and that's still
chains.
The case now?
Well, it has changed, obviously. You know, you've got your McDonald's and you've got your Australian versions of coffee and everything. But I'm going back 25 years ago to, you know, it was my first job because it got me through my college, was working in the industry. But it really was always from that that local ma and pa operations. But it was about, I think Australia has an amazing farmer produce, and food is very much alive. I didn't really eat pizza when I first came to Canada. I rarely ate deep fried food because everything was just prepared fresh. But I think it was our travels that got us seeing what cuisine is. And I think that's how Atlas I know it's how Atlas got its name, because we actually just sat down one night knowing that we were opening up a cafe, and we just listed off all our favorite foods that we had enjoyed in our travels. And when we looked at it, it was like, oh my goodness, we're all over the map. And it was like, oh, a little Japanese, a little Italian, a little Mediterranean, the Mexican. So we just called it
out. And your menu still reflects that kind of, that Atlas or that worldwide influence. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is totally. We do have that global scope, but we do try to put a twist on it. Like, for example, I really miss the samosas on our menu, and a lot of people really had a hard time when we had to take it away. But they were never deep fried, because right. we actually don't have a deep fryer. So our samosas were rolled differently and baked. So when you see something like a quesadilla, you can't actually think we're emulating the exact traditional approach from the countries. We're putting our Atlas twist on our version of those cuisines.
So the Comox Valley now, 25 years later, has a very, I think, a really vibrant restaurant scene. There are new restaurants opening up this past winter and coming up this summer. What differentiates Atlas from the rest of them?
Well, I think you'll see, and how vibrant is it as a food culture that we are getting on the culinary scene as a destination? I think if you look at the quota of how many owner-operator chef outlets there are, I think we should all take pride in the fact that there's so many caring and dedicated, passionate people in our industry offering amazing cuisine. And yes, definitely the landscape, especially downtown. When I think about 24 years back, we had Mud Sharks, Union Street, a couple of the Chinese places. There wasn't too much around for us as options. And now you'll see someone like Nikki Ramenya. You know, that's a counter service approach. It's under 20 seats. It's not fast food, but it's quick service. And I think Atlas stands alone because we are still dedicated to the art of dining, and we have incredible staff that are passionate about table service and about interacting and, you know, just having that experience of being able to service in a timely manner, but with a really warm approach.
Well, you know, I've told you, talked to you about this, just how amazed I am at the kind of service you guys provide. And I think that really is a differentiator, not just in our community, but pretty much anywhere I go. You know, Atlas service is at the top of my experience. So tell me a little bit about where that comes from and how you've maintained that, because lots of places service is just falling through the floor.
Well, it definitely is a reflection of the workplaces that I was trained in. When I first arrived in Whistler in 1988, I have the great privilege to say my first employment was at Araxes in the Village Square, and Jack owned Araxes at that time. And it was one of the most intense interviews I've ever gone into, and it was intense training. You really did have to know every nuance of every plate and profile and pairing of wines to make sure that you are enhancing that diner's experience, and you're bringing something that they didn't know to the table to interact them and connect with the food and the whole experience. So I got trained under Jack, and I have taken his ethos with me. He was very systems orientated. And I truly believe that consistency is key to our industry. And I had the pleasure of managing in Victoria, my very first job here after I married Trent, my partner. I worked at Rebecca's and Bastion Square in downtown Victoria. And I hired Connie Earle. And Connie and I worked together at that establishment. And then when the dream of opening up Atlas up in Courtenay, Connie came along with us as our very first employee. She was actually our baker. She was on the back of house. She's been, for the last 14 years, our front of house manager. And she shares that equal passion that I have about making sure that that consistency, the training, but it really comes down to having a heart and truly caring for our guests to make sure that they're having a positive experience and that we've enhanced their day. So I feel very blessed to have someone like Connie in our Atlas family. She sets the tone of that polished service, and she has so much passion behind her. She's dedicated to the industry, and I think it trickles down into the staff. When someone cares that much, we collectively care.
Well, it certainly feels that way when we're there. Now, along the way, you said Trent definitely was an entrepreneur, and I've seen you guys start a couple of things. You know, like you started the first, gourmet pizza or alternate pizza place with Orbitz. Then you also launched a very different kind of venture with Avenue and Comox. Can you talk a bit about what led to those experiments and what you learned from them and where they've gone?
Sure. So Orbitz morphed into place because we're very space confined in the kitchen at Atlas, and we are a scratch kitchen. We make our focaccia and all our baked goods. So at the time, the pizza by the slice was something that Atlas was offering, but we were having a really hard time keeping up with that mandate of being able to in-house bake. So we actually needed a bigger kitchen. And when Orbitz came about, we were able to satellite over all our fresh produce of baked goods. And then about 6 months later, I had a dream and it was like, oh my goodness, we can free up space if we build a walk-in cooler. So in the end, we did build a cooler out the back that took out a lot of refrigeration. That was part of why it was so confined. So we ran Orbitz and Atlas together for about 18 months. And then Matt and Courtney bought us out at Orbitz so we could just focus on Atlas as it was getting busier, and we were a little stretched, even though it was just a couple of blocks away. It really did occupy our every day. At the time, we were living above Atlas. We lived above Atlas for almost 10 years and operating a business that was breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week with a second entity. We weren't really breathing. So that's how Orbitz came and went. And then, you know, Atlas came about because Trent had been in the kitchen every service, every night, and he was looking for a new canvas. And it's in the offering of what kind of equipment can be within the kitchen. And so Trent loves drafting and setting up and doing layouts. So he got to build from scratch a dream kitchen with equipment that Atlas was restricted to have just because of the space.
You guys are working out of a closet in Atlas, and your Avenue kitchen was like, it was huge compared to that.
It's a dream, totally. And the idea there also in, we had read the E-Myth, and we recognized that both of us were caught in technician mode. Whereas on that entrepreneurial level, if you don't feed that entrepreneurial spirit, that creative piece does get stagnant because you're just in technician. And that's exactly what we are still, for Trent specifically, stuck in. Even though we read them and knew in the knowledge of what we were supposed to do to keep shifting, the idea of opening up Avenue was, let's get a head chef in at Atlas and get Trent off that main role, but still collaborative and mentoring. And then let's get a head chef at Avenue. And that would elevate Trent to be, you know, above both head chefs and not so much scheduled in the day-to-day wine cooking. But unfortunately, the head chef at Avenue put his finger in a blender and took part of his finger off. And we had a double CB claim before we even opened the enterprise. And Trent had to dive in and be the man, and that was never really the intention there. So it really stretched us mentally and physically and emotionally. the first 3 years of Avenue, if it was a standalone and if we didn't have the ground of Atlas, we definitely would have had to have closed. It really did leak a lot of debt in those first 3 years. But eventually the formula and the community did understand the vision there, and we got stability in the hiring of Chef Aaron Rail, who worked for us for 5 years before he segued into his own enterprise now at the White Whale. We were able to, the irony there too is that we ended up putting it up for sale because Chef Trent and I did actually reach burnout. We lived and breathed our businesses and it was all consuming. So we did put Avenue up for sale just to create some breath. And the irony is it was my manager, Gregor Mowat, and his beautiful wife, Michelle, who purchased Avenue. He was my manager when I was a server at Chin Chin in Vancouver, which was just one of many other operations of Jack's where I worked at Araxes. So it was a beautiful, I felt like I was handing it to family. And if anything, they've enhanced it and they've got Chance at their helm there now. And it does warm my heart walking into Avenue and seeing how they've taken our original vision and taken it up to the next level.
I've got to hand it to you guys. Like just like I said, you in my intro, to my mind, you've changed how we enjoy food here. And it, you know, when you started Orbitz, that was wow. Like this is like, I'm not going to mention any other pizza places, but the Orbitz was a different pizza place. And then when Matt McDonald took it over, I remember interviewing one of my favorite chefs in the Valley here when I was writing for Eat Magazine, and I asked him, so like who is your favorite chef in the Valley? And he said, oh, Matt, you should, you know, the stuff he's doing at Orbitz is amazing, because he wasn't just doing pizzas, but the pizzas he was doing were really amazing. And it is lovely to see what Jason's doing with Gorilla. We just ran into him at Gladstone yesterday, and he was telling us about, you know, his vision. So it really is exciting to see these people doing amazing things, which, you know, is every chef an entrepreneur? Like, do they all want to start their own restaurants? Is that kind of just when you hire a chef, you just know they're going to eventually kind of leave and do their own thing?
Well, I think when you are an executive chef, you have to live and breathe that company. So I am not surprised that majority of chefs move on to do their own, because the hours that they have to pull and the dedication, you really should be working for yourself. You really have to be paid well. And, you know, that chef has to be remunerated for that effort. It's not just the turning up every day. They don't turn their creative mind off. They go home and they are looking in recipe books. They've got to come up with a new approach. How do you, you know, it's a moving industry for us. There's new ingredients all the time that surface, you know, and it's changing. And I think also the diner and their expectations, I think, is very astute. I'm so proud of our community because we have some really educated people that support the food and beverage industry, and they understand the dedication and flavor profiles, and they're just as engaged as we are. And I think, you know, you can also look at someone like Bee's Knees, Chef Paul DeRitter. He was our sous chef for 4 years, and then he went off into the catering realm. We've had so many amazing people come through, you know, help us elevate our Atlas. And it's in that collaboration and in the cooperation of seeing people follow their dreams. It's Atlas is bigger than of just Trent and I. It's on the backs of so many past and present people that really care about being in the food industry.
I think you have set an amazing example, and you've got like your legacy is pretty incredible. You did talk, so you were talking about your audience or the public that enjoys your food. How would you characterize them? Like who do you see as your target audience?
Well, I think we're very lucky in that we have that global approach, because in that little something for everybody, we care about the little people and everyone in between. You know, there was some times that I've looked into the room when we're at capacity and I'll see, you know, a rainbow unicorn coloured hairstyle that's got a mohawk sitting with grandma, and next to them is a young family with their newborn, and they're all talking and they're all interacting. And I think our target audience is basically the entire community, and when their friends and family come to visit, we're on their hit list, bless that. And also there's that tourism piece that, you know, you will get fresh local mussels from us, from Hollywood oysters. And, you know, we've got the local cheeses. You have that garlic and brie off our menu. Well, Natural Pastures just won international again, you know, like for us to showcase the purveyors and local farmers, their love and their passion on our plates. You know, I feel it's really an honour for us to be, you know, that person in the middle that gets to present what this land of plenty can produce.
Well, that's a nice way to end this segment, because Comox, the First Nations word Comox means land of plenty, and we certainly get that at your restaurant. Now, tell us where we can find you physically on the street, but also online.
Sure. So we're in the heart of downtown. We're on 256th Street. It's a bright blue building. And online, you can get us at atlascafe.ca. And we also have a Facebook page that's basically the most active of all communications, is our Facebook. And you can find us just under Atlas Cafe.
Sandra, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk about you as an entrepreneur. Okay.
Hi, Hans.
Hi, Sandra. Hi. Hi. A little bit of a glitch there. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Okay. So we've talked about Atlas. Now let's talk about you. So what's your favorite thing about running Atlas these days?
Well, absolutely. The number one thing would be the people that I get to connect with every day. It could be from the staff or to the customer. We're blessed to have a lot of beautiful people that care about what they do and how they go about it. And I feel very supported by our staff. I feel as though it's not a job for them. It's an extension of their own living art. And equally, I feel blessed that we can serve our community together as a team and enhance everyone's day through sharing a meal.
That's great. What are three things or a couple of things that people don't know about Atlas Cafe?
Well, I would have to say the very first thing would be that Trent being my partner and the founder of All Things Atlas, is still working online. He has been online ever since we opened and the inception. He oversees the day-to-day running of the kitchen and the quality control and the standard, the vision and the consistency. So he's the quiet captain that's steering the ship, and it even includes everything to do with like maintenance and repairs. So I feel as though Trent is the silent warrior in our story. And then that segues to his nephews. I don't think people are aware that Trent's two nephews, Sloan and Zane Romano, have joined our kitchen team. They've moved over from Vancouver, and they are a part of a bigger picture for us, hopefully to keep Atlas in existence and the legacy of Atlas alive moving forward as part of a succession plan. So right now, it's a really heartwarming thing to watch Trent mentor his two nephews with the idea of them taking over the kitchen department. And it totally is in line with our company's ethos that it's a family affair.
Super. Now, what are something or some things that people, maybe something quirky or whatever, that people don't know about you?
Well, it's a bit revealing, isn't it? I guess I feel that I might have a bit of a quirky sense of humour. I know that in our Western society, we all work really hard, and where we work is where we spend most of our time. So it's important to do, and in the work that you do, that it is something that you love. And we can have some pretty intense services. And so I think with my quirky humour, I'm able to bring some levity to the service and to keep the smiles on the faces of our staff when they're challenged. And I think my humour can't be said out front, but it can definitely be said out in the back wheel just to keep everyone light.
So should we be asking you to do some stand-up routines at a Lyft event?
You are so funny. I think Ocean Vane is my little idol because she used to do stand-up, and I talk to her quite often because some of the stories that we get to see in this human exchange, I see some stand-up comedy. That's an alternative life, I think.
Okay, so what was your biggest failure and what did it teach you?
I think in the last couple of years, Atlas being 23 years old, we have been so dedicated and so focused that this little epiphany or revelation has only just come to surface, that I think our biggest failure to date would be that we have been all consumed by our business and we didn't quite value the importance of balancing and cultivating a work-life balance. Any entrepreneur will tell you that you live and breathe it and you take your stuff home with you. But setting healthy boundaries and making sure you're taking time to go and smell the roses or take a walk in the forest. But for me and Trent, I feel as though we did put the priority of work at the forefront and we haven't carved out enough playtime. So at this moment, I would have to say, just making sure you get that balance of work-life balance and you're nourishing your spirit in the right way.
Okay. So the next question is, has mentorship or community played a role in your success?
Absolutely. You know, when we first opened up Atlas, we didn't have much of a support group around us, and we would have loved to have something like Lyft in our back pockets where we could collaborate and table any of our, you know, frustrations or advice. So I think more important for me right now would be the fact that the mentor piece is critical. I take a lot of time and effort to help the people that are employed with us to follow their dreams. And it's been a wonderful thing to watch people actualize their ideas. So mentorship is critical, I believe. I think that collaboration and cooperation piece is intricate to everyone's success, and feeling supported by your community is paramount.
Who was your most important hire and why were they the most important?
Well, I believe Connie, being our very first employee, was critical because even though she started in the back of house as our baker, for the last 14, 15 years, she's been steering the front of house, and she has such a dedicated, passionate, just energy towards making people's dining experience being a positive one. And she is leading by example. She sets the tone. She has an amazing grace in the way she carries herself and the ethos that she instills in the training with our staff to make sure that that customer service is warm and really genuine and authentic. And equally as important, I would have to say, would be Chef John Frazier. He spent 12 years at the helm as executive chef of Atlas Cafe. And this gentleman has a work ethic like no one we know. He is a dedicated person towards food culture. We're so proud and honoured to have him at the helm. We're very excited for him, for his new beginnings. But people can listen to John. He is a co-producer and founder of Edible Valley Podcasts, and he shares that with Darren Howlett, who also was an Atlas alumni that worked front of house while he had many of his entrepreneurial ventures going. He was a very multi-talented guy. And the two of them as a duo are really connecting our food culture and inviting conversations for people to really listen to the passions of the farmers and the purveyors and what is really happening in the food culture and the food industry, not just in the valley or valley wide, it's reaching. So I'm really proud of John, and I would say that this gentleman is just one of my most favorite humans on the earth.
Wow, nice. Yeah, the Edible Valley podcasts are a great resource for anybody who wants to know what's happening in the Comox Valley and the region for sure. Let's talk about books now. So you've talked about reading, you've talked about how important that is. Can you just talk to me about some of your favorite books and why they're your favorites?
Yeah, sure. So over the course of the years, you obviously, as an entrepreneur and business person, you do need that resource. So for me, working with human resources, knowing how to communicate to your staff in a positive, non-violent communication way. I remember the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People being very important to us. The E-Myth was another business one. But on that personal side of things, one book that is really important to us and is actually a recommendation within our staff handbook is The 4 Agreements. It's some ethos that I think that you should take into your personal life and not just your business realm. And those 4 things are always doing your best, being impeccable with your word, don't take things personally, and never make assumptions. And I find that these 4 principles really set you up for success.
Okay. Well, what are you reading right now? Like, what are you going to go home after work tonight? What are you going to read?
Oh, thanks for asking. Toko Parr is this amazing writer that lives on Salt Spring, and she recently came to North Island College and did a presentation on her book Belonging, Remembering Ourselves to Come Home. And it's all about creativity, and I think that we are put on this earth to be creative beings. And she interweaves the concept of your dreams and how we should manifest that creative piece. So I'm really enjoying Toko Parr's book called Belonging right now.
Okay. So what is the smartest thing you've ever done?
Oh, well, that one's easy. Marrying my husband, Trent.
Okay. Well, congratulations on that. What is the dumbest thing you've ever done?
Well, I think it connects back to just that little piece that I feel like we did fail a little bit as business partners. Trent and I see now that we have neglected that personal piece. We have been so interwoven in the business dream that our marriage as a partnership with the business partnership has woven such a blanket that we have forgotten our own individual dreams, and we forgot to put our love relationship as paramount. It's important to cultivate and water those gardens. So I think that would be the dumbest thing, you know, in hindsight, that we didn't carve out enough holidays or quality time just to nourish ourselves and regroup that tank that's pretty empty when you're working so much.
Okay, so what's the scariest thing you've ever done?
Well, even though Atlas is very successful, I would have to say being in business. When we opened up Avenue, those first 3 years were extremely scary for us. We had some real restless nights where we didn't get much sleep because as a business model, it looked great, but those first 3 years were around the stock exchange crash in 2007. And money and people dining out over in Comox, it was a tough go to get through those first 3 years. And there was a time there that the debt was so big that we even feared for Atlas's existence, that we thought that it was going to bring both businesses down, that we had juggled and taken too big of a risk.
How do you think you got through that? Because, I mean, you obviously got through that and you know, Atlas is alive, Avenue, you sold Avenue and it's doing well.
I guess the cheapest employee that you can have on payroll when you're looking at expenses is you. And so how we got through that was I pulled myself out of Atlas and I became the floor manager and didn't take a wage for all those years. There was no profit. So it was about just turning up every day and putting in the gumption, knowing that there was little return. And then eventually, you know, if you do good food and show that you care towards the community, I think eventually they do see the fruits of your labor. And we did eventually become exactly what our vision was. We always saw Avenue as, we called it a bistro because bistros is the meeting place. We saw it as a neighborhood local dining option. And so eventually people did, you know, embrace us and support us, thankfully.
What new, and I'm taking this next question from Tim Ferriss, whose Tribe of Titans inspired our own podcast series here. What new belief, behavior, or habit adopted within the last 5 years is having the most positive impact in your life today?
Well, without a doubt, that would be about, again, taking time within your day to give back to your community. I really think that the business needs you, but you also do need to put in some volunteer time and mentorship time back towards your community that has supported you. So sitting on a board that means something to you, I think, is a way to give back. For example, I think of the Lush Food Security Organization, is a non-profit organization that is near and dear to my heart, because one of the branches that within this organization is that mentorship at that school level, where it creates an opportunity for children to understand where their food is coming from, how to grow food, how to prepare good food and good food choices onto their plate. And these programs that they put together, like the chef, there would be a chef helping a dad and daughter or a dad and son cooking class. Those type of events, you know, it can cultivate something that maybe within those little young hearts, they want to actually join our industry down the line as a career, or they understand what that better choice of nutrition will, you know, serve them. I think that ultimately that you have to inspire, and if you can give them that real experience and they can taste that experience, there's a lot of families that are working families that are having a hard time and learning to make good food out of, you know, canned products, or learning how to ferment and, you know, you work with seasonal food and making sure that you know how to store that well, so you've got those options for the 12 months ahead. That kind of stuff is important to me. So, yeah, aligning yourself with organizations that inspire you and giving back more to all your community, I think that is the biggest thing in the last 5-10 years that has put an impact in my life that makes me feel like I'm giving back.
Thanks for that. If you could have a conversation with someone who died before you were born, who would that be and what would you talk about?
Well, my mama happens to be the 13th child. She was the last to be born. And unfortunately, her mum and dad died by the time she was 9. So I've never really known a grandmother or a grandfather. I've had lots of cousins and lots of family, but I think I would just love to sit down and have a cup of tea with my grandmother. The idea of her having 13 children, being working poor, and I would just love to hear her stories and get to know her and get to know the type of woman that she was, because this hard work ethic that I have, I know it comes from my lineage, and I know that I come from good stock with hard work ethic gumption, and I think it started with her. She had a very short life, but I would have loved to have met her.
Cool. So you've been an Islander now for quite a while. Now, what is one thing every Vancouver Islander should do this year, something most of us don't know about or don't know the value of?
Well, I think I'll steer this one towards my Australian roots. Being an Aussie, I love the sound of the surf. So taking that magical trip across this Vancouver Island over to the Wild West Coast is always a treat for me. I love the food culture scene over there. But in particular, I love walking the Wild Pacific Trail. It is an awesome hike that is on the edge of life. And it doesn't matter what season you go. It could be summer, fall, or winter. You just get prepared and go for a hike and be under those canopies of those trees and just get to see the energy that comes from the surf meeting the edge of the earth. And then to enrich that experience, being a foodie, I just love going to Norwoods at New Clulit, and there's some amazing eateries like Wolf in the Fog in Tofino, or Cooma, or Shelter. There's just such an amazing options for dining. So I would encourage people to head west.
Okay. If someone gave you $1 million to support local entrepreneurs, what would you do with that?
Oh, that's a tough one because I've never had $1 million to think I could spend, Hans. My mind's just racing. I think I would like to take a lead from where Lyft has created a place within this community, and that would be to create a hub of brick and mortar where we could utilize a meeting gathering place where people could work share or have conferences. I recognize that this valley is diverse and it's growing. We've got some really great accommodation options with Old Spa Hotel. We have the Kingfisher. There's lots of places to come, but there's no real place for that convention where we all can gather on a large attendance. So I would hope that we could create some form of conference center.
Okay, well, let's work on that, eh?
Yeah.
What advice do you have for young entrepreneurs on the island?
Well, keep inspired, dream big, and follow your dream, because we only have this one life, so you must do what you love and follow that. But take heed and make sure you do cultivate a healthy work-life balance. Family is so important, and you don't want to jeopardize missing out on sharing quality time with your family because you're living and breathing your business.
Okay. Now, this last question is it's quite appropriate for you. I ask this from everybody, and you have traveled the world, so I'm curious about your response. So aside from Atlas Cafe, what's your favorite place to eat in the whole world?
Oh, wow. Favorite place to eat in the whole world. Well, the Comox Valley, for one, has so many amazing places. Trent and I dine out 2 to 3 times a week. We love the fact that there is so many owner-operator chef establishments, and you can taste the love here. So outside of eating locally, I would have to say it would be sharing with people that I love, my husband cooking alongside with Connie Earle and Tori Howlett and Ivan. When we all gather as a family and we share four or five courses together with amazing wine pairing, it truly warms my heart to be in a room and taste the love of the creative talents that I get to have and call family.
Yeah, well, you've got quite a wonderful food family there. You're a very lucky woman.
I feel blessed.
Yeah. Well, we're blessed to have you in this community and blessed to have you and Trent doing Atlas and the various other things you've basically given birth to over the last 23 years here. You really have changed how we
enjoy food here. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Hans. But also as a reflection, thank you for what you do and for all the work that Lyft is creating for so many people. Opportunity is for the taking. And I do see you as a bit of a honeypot. So thanks for attracting all the worker bees.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling me a honeypot. That's quite lovely. And people should know that Atlas has been a community partner with Lyft since 2015. And your support has been really helpful and huge in terms of what we do. So, you know, the stuff that we do and the stuff that you do, it happens because there's a lot of people involved and a lot of support. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Happy to be on board.
Okay. And thanks for taking the time to do this. And I'll be posting this shortly. Good luck with the rest of the year at Atlas, and my regards to Trent.
Thanks, Hans. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lyft Podcasts, a series all about the entrepreneurs, creatives, and resource people who are growing local businesses. If you liked what you heard, please share via email or social media. And if you are sharing via social media, please use Vancouver Island's talent brand or talent tag, hashtag WEAREVANISL. That's hashtag We Are Van Isle. This is one of the tools we've created to promote entrepreneurs on the island. Lyft is able to do its work thanks to the support of solution sponsors like SureCopy Courtney, Mastermind Strategy, 50th Parallel Public Relations, Finneron Hyundai, Jabin Postal Films, Presley & Partners, and 98.9 The Goat, as well as community partners like Atlas Cafe, The Island Word, My Tech Guys, McKinnon Photography, Island Soul Films, Investors Group, The Creator Space, and Douglas Magazine. Together, we're making Shift happen for local businesses. Thanks for listening.